sleeping, you might find what you're looking for. But trust me, child, you haven't seen half of it yet. Half of it yet. Half of it, half of it.
Hello everyone, we are here today to finally discuss the huge spoilers that have been building up over the winter in order for us to watch Season 3B, which starts next week on January the 6th. So over the break we've kind of done a bunch of different shows about what we've been up to. Some of them have sort of addressed some spoilers, like when Karen went to Comic-Con and all of that kind of thing, but since 3A ended, we've mostly been doing our sort of bite-sized episodes about different things, theories, and all sorts of fun things like that. We've been avoiding actually recapping the spoilers as they come out, like in a news section, because we were saving them up to do in one big episode before the actual Season 3B premiere. So that's what we're here to do today, and hopefully it is satisfactory to everyone. We have been obviously keeping track of all of those spoilers as they come out on Hyperball.com, so hopefully if you've been tracking the Teen Wolf tag on Hyperball, you've been seeing all Karen's articles about it. Karen's here with me today, by the way. It's me and Karen today, so hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Oh, not too bad.
And how was your Christmas? We just spoke before Christmas to do our ridiculous holiday episode, which I think went down very well.
Yes.
I can't think about it or I'll start crying again. Seriously, for days and days, I just had to think about that one line and I just started, like, just uncontrollably.
Yeah.
Anyway, you had a good Christmas?
Yeah, it was pretty nice. Actually, I'm pretty sure I got everything that I really wanted, which was cool, and all my gifts went over really well, so that was nice.
You didn't have any uncles that used to be dead showing up?
No.
Okay, that's good. Neither did I. And yes, I had a fairly nice time, though it rained quite heavily, as predicted, which is better than fires, so yeah. So now it's before New Year's Eve, and we're going to hopefully get this out to you on New Year's Eve, on New Year's Day, so you'll have a week to think over all of our spoiler discussion before the actual episode airs 10 p.m. Monday night, January 6th on MTV, I believe. That's where it lives, right, Karen?
Yep.
Obviously, if you've got any questions or feedback about this episode or anything else, or if we've missed any spoilers, or if you want to ask us personally our opinion on anything we don't cover, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, which is NATWpodcast, or you can email us, which is NATWpodcast@gmail.com. I'll say thank you now to everyone who submitted a fan fiction to that email address in order for our episode last week. We got quite a few more than we were able to use, so we just picked out one to do. So thank you to everyone that sent that in and utilized the email address. And also our Tumblr, which is just Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, the full phrase, .tumblr.com. I think everyone probably follows that already, because we have like 13,000 followers or something now on there, which is like crazy person talk.
Oh my gosh.
I don't even like look at it because I can't handle it. Also, if you have been enjoying Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast during this fine year of 2013, it would be really awesome for us if you went to iTunes, where the podcast officially lives, and left a rating, like a 5-star rating, if you think we're worth 5 stars, or a review. Because that kind of stuff really helps us to continue existing and to, you know, be seen as a credible sort of media source and a credible resource for the show, like for anything that you want us to be able to do with the official Teen Wolf production. The better rated it is on iTunes, the more chance it is of being a big deal. So we don't sit here and plug that kind of stuff every episode, because honestly we don't often think about it. But If you want to do that as a Christmas present to us, that would be very kind. So, Karen has been compiling many an article about all the different spoilers that we think are the most important. She's also got something coming out, which should be out by the time you get this episode, a recap of 3A and where everyone sort of stands at that point. So did you want to sort of start off saying a little bit about that, or what do you want to do?
Yeah, sure. As far as I could really tell, there's like basically four major plot lines to season 3A. So basically four things that you guys need to kind of remember going into 3B so you can kind of get a hold on what everybody's going through and where they stand at that point. And the first one is obviously the Alpha Pack, which was one of the main antagonists in 3A. And the Alpha Pack was made up of Deucalion, Kali, Ennis, Ethan, and Aiden. And Kali and Ennis are dead now. Ethan and Aiden are sort of just floating around. They're kind of being speculated as possibly joining Scott's pack, but we're not really sure if that's going to happen or not, considering that they did help kill Boyd, and not everybody's too particularly happy with them. And Deucalion is not blind anymore, and he's been sort of set free out into the world with the warning not to do anything sinister, or Derek and Scott will come after him. And then you have the Duroc, who is Jennifer Blake. And by the way, I don't know about you, but I keep thinking about when we interviewed Haley, and I'm like, she just lied to our faces the whole time.
I feel like that's their job, but, you know, it is.
I know.
I think that there's a lot of things that she said that were kind of, they weren't lies, they were just sort of one side of it, you know, like, it's, like, you know, because, yeah, a lot of the stuff she said about sort of, Jennifer's attitude and stuff like that, I think it was true. Like, I think with the Duroc, who she was when she was being Jennifer Blake was quite sincere, and you kind of saw that in the way that she kind of appealed to Derek, but then she just had these like schizophrenic fits of like homicidal mania. And I mean, she obviously knew what she was playing at the whole time, but when she sort of talked to Derek about how she felt and all that kind of stuff, it did seem very genuine, and it did seem to be a very big driving force for her. So I don't know, it's interesting, and hopefully we'll get to talk to Haley about it again at some point, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not mad at her because she obviously couldn't tell us anything, but I keep thinking back to it and I'm like, if we had waited one more week to interview her, but you know, it was fun anyway. it was great. Yeah. But yeah, Jennifer Blake was the Duroc, and she was sacrificing a bunch of people to get power enough to beat Deucalion, since he was that crazy demon wolf thing. And, you know, in the end, she died as well. But all of those sacrifices, especially the sacrifices that Allison, Scott, and Stiles made at the Nematon, which is that big tree, that's going to have a huge influence on 3B because it gives power back to the Nematon. And we've seen in a lot of the promos that little bit of a tree, the sprout that's coming out of the stump, meaning that the Nematon is sort of growing again. And so that's going to be a beacon calling other supernatural things to Beacon Hills, and that's going to be sort of the premise for 3B, and I think probably for a lot of the other seasons, because I don't think the Nematon's going to go away anytime soon.
Hellmouthaton. I just said the Hellmouthaton.
Yeah, pretty much.
Sorry.
And then the last major point for 3A is the fact that Scott is a true alpha. And in the last episode, episode 12, he becomes an alpha as he tries to get through the mountain ash barrier that Jennifer, you know, sort of spread around her. And he does that, and that's what enables Deucalion, and then later Peter, obviously, to kill her. So Scott's an alpha now, and Derek isn't, and so that's going to be a whole new dynamic that's going to be coming to 3B. And there's a lot more going on that happened in 3A, obviously, a lot of deaths, and that's going to have an impact on a lot of people and relationship changes and that sort of thing. But those are probably the major points that I think, you know, we'll have to keep in our heads to understand what's going on with everybody in 3B. And you can obviously read the article when it goes up on Hypewall to get more of a in-depth analysis of what happened in 3A.
Thank you very much for putting that together, Karen. I have just read it, and it is quite amusing, as we were just discussing.
But I'm pretty sure the word you used was, Karen, you are weird.
It's all good. It's all part of the territory, I think. The first sort of major spoiler that people have known about for a long time, and this is kind of, been news in the Teen Wolf world for a long time, was the inclusion of a new character called Kira, who may or may not, most likely is, a supernatural person herself, as a kitsune, the Japanese fox mythology. Now, we've already done two gigantic mythology episodes about the Japanese culture and all of the Japanese references that might end up being in Teen Wolf, because of sort of what we've seen so far in promo photographs and in trailers. But do you want to just sort of sum up, you know, the official news about Kira and the Japanese culture that's coming into the show?
Yeah, basically, the kitsune, like we said, was, it's a trickster spirit, it's like a werefox, and we've gone really in-depth about it in episodes 42 and 44, so if you're really interested in learning more about that, make sure you revisit those, because we had Jen and Danya on, who are, as far as I'm concerned, experts on the matter, and they came up with a lot of really awesome research that I think is going to be really relevant going into 3B. But the kitsune is not necessarily a bad guy, not necessarily a good guy, from what I understand. They're just trickster spirits. And I think if Kira is the kitsune, it's going to be really interesting to see how everybody sort of deals with that. And Kira, you know, just in general, is a transfer student into Beacon Hill. She's of Korean and Japanese descent, which is also important, we think, because the way that they're going with the kitsune myth is sort of going into the Kumiho myth, which is a Korean sort of spin-off, I guess is the best way to say it, of this sort of like werefox creature. And it's a little bit darker and scarier. And that's, we talked about that a lot in episode 44, once we got the trailer and realized that maybe they were going down a darker path than we had originally thought. But Kira, we don't know a whole lot about her now. We don't necessarily know that she's the kitsune, but I think at this point people are pretty accepting that that's probably what she is. But I don't know about you. I'm really excited for Kira. I know you didn't get to see the first episode, but the first episode of 3B is really good, and I think Kira is a big part of that. She's just really kind of cool and awkward, and I think she's going to fit in really well, and I hope everybody loves her.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, her parents are involved as well. Her father is a teacher at the school, is that right?
I don't know if that's the history teacher.
Yeah, and And, you know, that whole thing, we've seen it a little bit in the trailer of, you know, what looks like her father talking to Chris Argent. Is that the same character in the trailer?
No, the really old guy?
Oh, yeah.
No, that's not her father.
Do we know how he fits in yet?
Not really. I think there's been some speculation that he could possibly be a Yakuza warrior, like, leader person.
Okay.
Because he definitely knows a lot about the kitsune and a lot about the void, which is sort of the darker side of that. And he's definitely creepy and mysterious and has a lot of information.
Okay.
But right now, we don't even have, like, a name or anything for him.
Okay, so, you know, it's obviously not just her family. That this whole Japanese mythology, as discussed in the episode, is possibly going to involve the Yakuza in several ways, which is like the Japanese mafia. And there has also been a bit of a hint, I believe, for some of the promo photos and the casting calls that's going to address the Japanese internment camps that happened during the Second World War when the Japanese Americans were rounded up due to Japan being on the other side of the war. That aspect is really interesting to me, and I'm very curious to see how that is going to be used or what kind of history or sort of animosity that created in the terms of what's going on with these characters. So I'm curious about there being flashback scenes to that. Is that something that's in the first episode or something we will have to wait and see?
Yeah, we're going to have to wait and see that. But I'm really interested in it too, especially since the couple of set photos that have been floating around and stuff. It looks really cool, and I'm just really curious how they're going to tie it all in, because I love when they do that sort of thing, when they have flashback episodes, and I think the ones that they've done in the past have gone over really well.
And we've never seen like a full-on historical period, you know, we've seen flashbacks to earlier in the particular characters' lives, so I'm gonna presume this might be a flashback to, you know, an early time in maybe that old guy's life or something like that, but we shall have to see, I suppose. So the second big thing, which we kind of suspected, you know, from the final scenes of season 3A, you know, what the repercussions were going to be. But the trio, our main trio of Styles, Scott, and Allison, are having hallucinations in different forms and handling it in different ways due to their sacrifice of drowning and the darkness that's now around their heart. And that's something that's been talked about in panels, and there's quite a bit of footage of that in the trailer so far. So what are you making of that so far?
I think that 3B is going to be so creepy, and it's really going to mess with our heads. And I mean, the tagline is lose your mind. And I think that kind of applies to us as well as the characters, because they've been describing 3B as a psychological thriller for quite a while. And I think that that's the perfect way to put it. And the first episode, if that's any indication, I think it's just going to get crazier and crazier as we go on through the season. But it's so exciting to see our characters, our favorite characters, go through these things and hopefully come out stronger on the other side, not crazier, but that's definitely a possibility too. And I think that I'm probably going to be watching this season with all the lights on for sure.
So, I mean, so far from the trailers, it seems like, you know, Scott keeps hallucinating that he can't control his transformations and so stops transforming altogether or something like that. And Allison seems to be hallucinating that she's a homicidal maniac again. Or that, you know, I know we obviously know that her aunt, Kate, has returned to the show in the form of her own hallucinations. Possibly tapping into her fear of becoming like her. Whereas, you know, Styles is sort of flat out, you know, mental institution style crazy, like, you know, not being able to define what is real, kind of literally envisioning different things in front of him, like, you know, in day-to-day situations, like losing track of what is real. So, and there is some footage in the trailer from later on with Styles kind of freaking out, wearing sort of a t-shirt and sweatpants that looks like he might actually be sort of interned in the hospital at some point. So, you know, are those hallucinations something that start in the first episode, or what happens?
Absolutely. You get all of that right from the beginning. And I don't want to give anything away because it's just so good, but I think it starts off strong and it's just going to keep getting worse. But I think, I mean, it's cool to see, like, Joe Wagner come back as Kate. And I always sort of liked the idea that Scott is struggling with his transformation, because I think that sort of shows he's not giving in to his animal instinct and he still worries about what he's capable of. And I think that's important for him as a character to struggle with. But I'm really interested to see what Styles is going to be going through, because even though Allison is a human as well, she's a hunter. She's kind of acclimated to this. She's trained for it. Styles is just a regular guy, and he's seen a lot, and I can imagine what goes on in his head sometimes. And they've described 3B as being Styles' season. Mm. And so I'm really interested to see how far they go with this and to see how Dylan acts the crap out of this stuff. Because from what little we've seen in the trailers, looks amazing. And they said that he's going to be doing a lot more dramatic stuff. And I just cannot wait to see that.
In regards to Styles, I will probably put a little bit more about this in my note that we're going to write next week after everyone on the team has seen the first episode. We're planning a bit of a surprise for you after the next episode, by the way. Once everyone on the team has seen the first episode, we're going to do a prediction letter. Each of us is going to write down our thoughts of what's going to happen in the season, and then once it's finished, either on a live stream or maybe at ByteCon if we have a meetup or something like that, or maybe, you know, in an episode, we're going to open our envelopes and read out all of our predictions that we made and laugh at them or scream at them or whatever it is that we're going to do. So I actually have something about this that I know is going in that letter, but I know that there was a spoiler casually mentioned at a panel, I think, about Styles's mother and, you know, people asking, you know, oh, her death, and he was like, no, it's not supernatural, it's from a disease, it's from a disease which may cause problems later. Now, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but to me that feels like something that if it's going to cause problems later, it might be not just flat out cancer, which obviously we know isn't hereditary or contagious, but it might more be like a hereditary disease. And I'm wondering if it was some sort of brain deterioration disease, whether that would affect, if that would come into play, if they think what's happening to Styles is because of that, you know, if his father starts to think that, or if the hospital starts to think that, or even if it is happening and so it makes Styles' stuff worse than the others, if you know what I mean, because his brain is actually messed up. So that's my prediction right now, and I'm probably write something at length on that in my letter. But I don't know if that, you know, thing about his mother, you know, his disease being a problem, is it was a throwaway thing. But the fact that they said it'd come up later made me think it wasn't, that it would cause a problem later, made me think of it was some sort of hereditary thing. And now I'm thinking brains. So.
Oh my God, that's so sad and tragic if that's the case.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine him going to the doctor and having these crazy things and them being like, well, you know, your mother, you know, not even necessarily like a mental illness like schizophrenia or something, but like a literal physical brain deterioration, like MS or like something like that. And, you know, for them to be like, well, that must be what's happening to you kind of thing. And it being even worse. So yeah, we'll see. Sorry. Let's move on. The next thing that we have is a new set of hunters coming into town led by a woman, and they don't agree with the Argent's new sort of game plan, their new code to be all nice. And they have a Latin influence, South American possibly. So this was something you spoke about when you went to Comic-Con, Karen, wasn't it? And I'm not sure if it was something you pieced together that's been confirmed since then, or what exactly happened, but what was the deal with them?
Well, this was actually one of the questions that I asked Jeff specifically, because I wanted to know, at the end of 3.12, we got a new code from the Argents. Allison decided that instead of we hunt those who hunt us, it was going to be we protect those who cannot protect themselves. And I asked Jeff if that was going to cause any problems in the hunter community, because we know that there are a lot more hunters out there. Mm-hmm. And he said it has ramifications, and he talked about how it's going to have an effect on the hunter community. And he talked about a couple of new characters who are part of a certain section of that community that doesn't agree with the change in philosophy. And he did say that they would have a Latin influence. And that was sort of, pieced together with some South American stuff and a couple of other things that he had said earlier. So there's no like 100% on that, but I wouldn't be surprised if that had something to do with it.
I feel like, you know, I feel like this season's going to end up being very full of new characters, but then we sort of felt that way about last season as well. Like, there's more new people, like, from all different sources, and it ended up working out, so
that yeah, because they all died.
Great. Okay.
And I think another thing to point out here, too, if people remember, is that Cora had been in South America previously, so that could tie in pretty well, too.
Yeah, that's something that I know people were hanging on to. You know, I feel like that's probably not a coincidence. So we shall see. I mean, South America's a big place, but we shall see. And then there was also what Jen said about the South American Japanese Brazilian community as well.
Right.
Yeah, which, again, you should go listen to episode 42. But apparently there's, you know, out of all the places in the world, there's a huge Japanese community in Brazil. The way that you might see a lot of, you know, Japanese Americans who are, you know, first, you know, second, third generation American, that Brazil has a huge Japanese immigrant community that's been there for quite a long time as well. So that, you know, again, all could tie in. We don't know yet, but we shall see. Now, something that people have been excited about for a long time is the idea of a Halloween episode for Teen Wolf, because it seems to go with the territory and it hasn't really been addressed yet, and apparently this season there will be, and I believe it's meant to be like a two-parter, like a mischief night, the night before Halloween, and then the actual Halloween day or night, and there's going to be a blacklight party at Derek's loft, and there's going to be people with face paint, and, you know, what exactly else do we know so far?
Not really a whole lot. I mean, I think it's going to be pretty creepy, but those are the main points, I think, that we know so far. And just what we get from the trailer with everybody in their glowing face paint and stuff, I don't know, but it kind of looks like a lot of them are under some sort of spell or manipulation because...
Or drugs. Always drugs.
Yeah, right. But it's sort of like the Wolfsbane that Lydia put in the drinks a couple of seasons ago. But, you know, because Scott's eyes flash red and he looks kind of creepy, and Allison and Isaac are dancing together and Allison looks a little creepy. And you can tell that Lydia, she says something like, they came out of the dark, and she looks really afraid and kind of out of it. And it's just, I'm really curious to know what sort of influence, if like the actual Halloween day and like Mischief Night and all of that have an influence on them, or if there's something else going on. But I think that this is a really cool way to kind of open up the world a little bit more and see what else could possibly exist out there.
I am curious as to why they're having this party in Derek's loft.
Yeah.
You know, I know when I think Derek Hale, I think blacklight party with,
of course,
you know, UV makeup. But I thought that was like a really niche interest of mine, not something that would appear in the show. Sorry. Apparently there is a reason for it. Like, that was one of the things on, you know, one of the, you know, huge spoiler master posts that people have been rounding up, that, you know, it has been mentioned that there's a reason that that's happening in Derek's loft. So we'll just have to, you know, theorize about that until then.
I can't exactly like see him condoning this on his own. Like, they must have talked him into it, or just like hijacked his loft or something, because can you imagine him just being like, guys, we should totally have a blacklight party for Halloween?
Yes I can. It's exactly what I think Derek Hale would do. And all of his UV makeup will be pink.
Oh my god. Yeah. You know, something really interesting about this is that Jeff Davis actually went to a blacklight party and he thought it looked so cool and that would look so cool on camera that that's why he decided to have this episode be a blacklight party.
All right, Jeff. If, you know, if that works for you, then, you know, I'm sure you pulled it off. apparently, you know, something else that I don't know if you know too much about or, like, what exactly is confirmed, but the full face that we get in the UV makeup, which I think is Isaac, you know, we see a little bit on other people, but that one shot of, like, the pink and orange stripes, which I believe is Isaac dancing with Allison, people are saying that, like, the pattern of that looks a lot like the masks that have been sort of popping up and that mean something in the mythology, which I don't have the entire backstory on, but there was something I saw put together about that pattern of stripes and how it sort of matches these traditional masks. And we, you know, something in the trailers mentioned, like, what was behind the mask, and they're like, nothing, and all of that kind of thing. So I'm sort of keeping my mind open in regards to the whole, you know, whether it is completely, you know, conscious, innocent party, or if there is some sort of strange influence happening there, or a hallucination again. So
that's really interesting. I don't think I really noticed that, but it reminds me of the face that we saw in the wood paneling during Motel California. That maybe it doesn't mean anything, but it's sort of just like a throw.
Yeah.
Like a throw out to what's going on or something.
Yeah. I'll try and find it for you, what people were saying, but it was just something to think about, really, that, you know, that scene might not just be innocent, you know, or as innocent as a blacklight rave can be. Anyway. Another new character coming along this season is the new deputy of the town, and the actor is called Ryan Kelly, I believe. Is that right?
Yes.
And he's very nice looking.
Yes, he is. He has amazing eyes.
So he's going to be, like, the sheriff's sort of deputy and, you know, his sort of new blood, you know, the sheriff is going to mentor him. So, you know, it does seem significant that, you know, he got a whole press release for his casting. Like, if he's going to be, you know, a major character or involved in the story in some way. Obviously, his old deputy, Tara, the sheriff's old deputy, Tara, who was close friends with Stiles, she was killed in Jennifer's sacrifices. So that sucks. But this guy is called Parrish, Deputy Parrish.
Yep.
And do you think he's going to die?
I kind of thought so at first, because they say he'll assist Sheriff Stilinski in uncovering the mysterious supernatural occurrences that plague the murder-prone Northern California town before becoming part of the mystery himself. And I was like, okay, so they're, like, going to kill him off, and that's going to be one more reason for them to, like, keep looking into what's going on, and it's sort of going to be, like, another clue. But I'm not so sure. We've gotten some other information about how the sheriff is now going to have to sort of do what Stiles was doing, in that he has to kind of follow up on all these supernatural occurrences, but also keep some people in the dark, like his new deputy. And I think that that's going to be really interesting to see him do that. And I don't know if he's going to die now, but I mean, it's always a possibility on Teen Wolf. You never know.
Yeah. Good luck, Deputy Parrish. We hope you and your nice eyes become some permanent, you know,
fixture.
Yeah.
On the show. And I mean, it's spelled differently, but his name is Parrish, so that can't go over too well.
What, like Parrish?
Yeah, like
he will perish.
You will die.
Well, you know, let's hope not. This isn't Harry Potter, where everyone's name has some sort of hugely significant meaning in regards to their, you know, like, I can't believe someone called Remus Lupin ended up being a werewolf. I mean, you know, I can't, you know, I just find that really difficult to, like, believe. No. Like, you know, anyway, there's going to be another flashback episode, which is actually looking at young Chris Argent. So that, as again, something that was discussed in our Japanese spoiler episode, that it may be tying into the, you know, that strange period with the Yakuza that Jen was talking about, that she hopes it's that certain time where things were sort of going down in a crazy way, but because this is going to be about when he's 18. So what's the kind of official word on that?
Well, it says that the flashback involves a heated battle with a kind of evil not yet seen on the series. And they go on to say that we'll also be seeing a Yakuza warrior. So I don't know if that means Chris has gone up against the Kitsune or the Nogitsune, the Void, which is sort of like the evil version of the Kitsune. Mm-hmm. If it means he's gone up against that, or if this could be something else entirely, which is pretty possible, I think. But I think it's interesting that within this, it's saying that we'll also be seeing a Yakuza warrior. And I'm very interested in seeing Chris in Japan during that time period that Jen was talking about, and possibly going up against some of not only the supernatural things, but the sort of human things too, like the Yakuza warriors. And I think just seeing a young Chris Argent is going to be really cool anyway, because there's a lot of history that we don't have of the Argent family, and anytime we get something along those lines gets me really excited.
Yeah, I mean, number one, I'm curious as to why the Yakuza care about werewolves and stuff. Like, if you know what I mean, if they're, like, you don't see the Mafia, you know, in, oh my god, Teen Wolf spin-off set in New York, which is totally like a Mafia undercover thing. Yeah, cool. Got it. Done. Season 5. You know, this is an organized crime syndicate, you know, that exists in the real world, and, you know, why are they involved in these supernatural goings-on? You know, whether it's just because the Japanese mythology is so present that, you know, it's something that's always tied into them, or, you know, we don't know why the Yakuza are involved in this entire storyline, you know, what they, you know, why they are involved in sort of the Japanese supernatural underworld, you know, whether the entire underworld's just one and the same now. And also Chris Argent being 18, one character that we've sort of speculated about occasionally on this show as someone we'd like to see and would like to see the influence of is his mother, like Chris and Kate's mother, as opposed to Crazy Pants Gerard, and whether Chris takes more after her and what she was like and who she was. So if he's only 18, I'm kind of hoping for the mum.
That would be awesome.
And have they cast 18-year-old Chris Argent yet?
Not that we know of. There are a few actors and actresses that have been cast, and we have no idea who they're meant to play, so it's possible that we've seen him, but we don't know that it's him yet. But definitely nothing concrete.
Okay. Another big issue that has been sort of going on, I guess, since, like, season one is the Peter and Lydia dynamic, whether... Sorry, I'm thinking about the poem. I'm thinking about Lydia being like, thanks, you can go now. Yeah. I think that forever I'm just going to be laughing. You know, forever, for the rest of time, I'm going to be laughing about that poem. Sorry. Yeah, Peter and Lydia, some people are like, Lydia should kill the hell out of Peter, you know, she needs revenge, all of that kind of thing. Some people like, Peter, you know, should be redeemed. You know, at the end of season 3A, it's obviously pretty clear that Peter is still, you know, not in a redemption place. He's still kind of cray-cray and thinks that he's going to gain power again in some way. And, you know, people really want Lydia to be the one to take him down. And apparently that story's not over and that they're going to have, you know, some sort of dynamic during this season. I mean, do you want Peter to, like, flat out be a bad guy and die?
I don't know. It's funny, okay, because I was rewatching 3A in order to write these couple of articles that I was writing and to get ready for the new season and all of that. Mm. And I just remember being, watching, what was it, Visionary? Yeah, it was the flashback, and how much lying he did to, like, Styles and Korra, and how creepy he was in that flashback. And I was like, dude, I hate Peter. Somebody just needs to kill him. And then in like the next episode, you get him taking care of Cora and hospital, him going after the twins. Yeah. And I'm just like, but I love Peter. Like, he's not the greatest all the time, but sometimes he is. And it's so hard, but they do it so well. And Jeff said multiple times that they love taking bad guys and turning them into good guys and vice versa. And I think, honestly, that Peter will never be black and white. I don't think he's ever going to be solely a good guy or solely a bad guy. That's just not in his nature.
Yeah.
And although I really would like to see him put in his place, and I mean, I wouldn't even necessarily care if he was killed as long as it was done correctly. Mm. I think that, you know, just I'd be happy with pretty much whatever they gave us, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, like I said, I don't think I would end up, you know, if it was just like, yes, he is the bad guy and now he's dead. I don't think I'd be too stoked on that because, you know, they have said that he's going to be this season, like, he's not the villain. He's an antagonist, like an annoying sort of pest, but not the villain. You know, much like Jackson, kind of, as opposed to someone like Gerard or, you know, Deucalion. But I feel like that he has, more to come. I don't understand anything about that visionary flashback episode, like, what his motivations were, like, why he wanted if you know what I mean, like, what he was trying to do, whether he was trying to, like, screw over Derek, if he really thought he was trying to help, like, what the hell happened. I still don't get it. I don't like to keep making this comparison, but all I can keep thinking of is, like, Spike in Buffy, like, 7 seasons, and it wasn't until, like, the 7th of 7 seasons that he literally became, like, the hero. Like, he went from villain, like, actual big bad, to antagonist, to anti-hero, who's kind of, like, stuck with them, even though his, like, private motivations are, like, not the best, to to actual hero with the correct motivations and, like, his heart being changed. And, like, you know, that's, like, an arc that can happen. And while I don't think Jeff would want to, like, copy that kind of arc exactly, it is one that people are usually really invested in, like, because they find, you know, just a straight-up arc of, I'm good, I stay good forever, really boring. So I think it would be something that would work in some way. And I'm just saying what I'm trying to say is just because at the end of season 3A, he was like, I'm the alpha now again. Just because he's made the same mistake again doesn't mean that that story is necessarily cut and dried, because villains often make the same mistakes several times before, you know, realizing that it's not actually a thing. Another example is obviously, like, Loki in the Avengers and in Thor. If you guys... have you seen the most recent one?
Yeah.
Okay, good. If you haven't seen the most recent one, it's out of cinemas now, so I don't care about spoiling you. Loki's death in Thor 2 was... I mean, that's the kind of death that I'd kind of be okay with Peter having if he was going to die. And I'm kind of really annoyed. I actually spoke to... I spoke to someone who actually has contacts, who knows this for a fact, that Loki's reappearance at the end of the movie was only added in after a few test screenings because people were like, no, he cannot be dead. He can't be dead. So they're basically, Marvel's original plot was for him to be redeemed and die in that way, like, full stop. And we don't know now if he's super evil again or if he, you know, just found a way to carry on because of the very last scene of him being sort of still around in some way. But their original idea for him that was that he was genuinely redeemed. He did that sort of triple cross with the villains and was on Thor's side and got killed to save Thor and Jane. And so that was actually what they wanted for him, except people weren't ready to let Loki go. So I'm hoping that however they do bring him back, because it's not going to be in Avengers 2, I'm hoping however they do bring him back, it is with some sort of integrity to the fact that that is where the character is, rather than that being just another trick to make him look good. Like, for example, Spike in Buffy died at the end of Buffy, and then came back in Angel as a ghost, but not of his own volition, if you know what I mean. And he was actually like, no one tell Buffy, because it probably meant so much to her that died, and now I feel really stupid that I'm alive again, if you know what I mean. Like, so that means nothing now, and she'll think that I did it on purpose and the stakes weren't really as high as they were. So that's what I'm hoping happens with Loki, but this is not Avengers cast, so the point is, if he had that kind of death, Peter, that would be kind of cool. Him being sort of, you know, ambitious and evil at the end of season 3A does not mean that that's where he's going to stay, but I know a lot of people just want him to be dead and that Lydia to cut him up into millions of pieces and all of that kind of thing, so...
Yeah, that was the other big thing with this whole idea was because Jeff kind of reached out to us and told us after an opinion piece went up on Hypable that, you know, what happened in 311, their little, I don't even think you can call it a conversation. It was basically
they saw each other at the door and people were a bit underwhelmed.
Yeah, which I understand, but also there was so much going on in those last two episodes that it's hard to really kind of be able to address everything. But Jeff said that that's by no means the end of the story, and they have plans for them to kind of interact more in 3B. And he says, Lydia certainly deserves her revenge, doesn't she? And I'm really interested to know how she's going to go about that, because I don't see Lydia, like you said, chopping Peter up into little pieces and stashing him away somewhere. Mm. But I also think that she's not going to forget anytime soon the things that Peter did to her. And, you know, we don't really know exactly yet how she came to be the Banshee, if it was as a direct result or if he sort of woke something up that was already inside of her or something like that. But I think it's going to be really cool to see their relationship, if you can call it that, kind of grow and change and see what exactly comes out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of curious as to what she thinks about him, like whether she wants him sort of far away from her or whether she wants to cut him up into lots of pieces or like whatever, if you know what I mean. I don't know whether she actually, you know, gives a damn or whether she's just sort of accepted that this is life now or whatever. And there's a lot of characters in the show that you could say that dynamic about. Like, obviously that's going to be an issue with Aiden and Ethan, you know, if they're going to be in the pack, like, you know, well, you killed my friend, and it's like, well, does anything I did when I was in the Alpha Pack count? Like, you know, what happens in the Alpha Pack stays in the Alpha Pack kind of thing. Like, you know, there's kind of, when stuff is such high stakes and people are dying so regularly and whatever, it kind of gets to the point where it's like, well, what still counts, if you know what I mean? Like, the kind of stuff that would be like a total, like, no-go zone forever in the real world, in supernatural style shows, like, doesn't seem to always apply. So, right. like alliances and stuff are like formed much more easily, or you know high stakes things sort of matter less because there are even bigger higher stakes things. But I don't know, it's interesting. And yeah, as I said, I want the Peter redemption story. I don't care what anyone thinks. It's what I'm here for. I want that.
I'm also interested to know what Allison might do too, because I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that maybe Allison and Lydia are gonna team up and try to take down Peter or something. Because even though her aunt was totally crazy, it was still her aunt, mm-hmm. and the fact that he killed her, I think, especially since she's being haunted by her in 3B, you know, those thoughts about her aunt aren't going to be going away anytime soon.
I mean, maybe like crazy Allison, like, gets influenced by fake, you know, hallucinating Kate. And, you know, she's like, let's kill Peter. And then Lydia, totally in her right mind, is like, yeah, let's kill Peter. But Allison's not actually, like, you know, actually wanting to do it. You know, Allison sort of started with the hallucinating, like, with her mother in the last season as well. You know, I don't know if that's ever going to come up again, like, if that's meant to have been an ongoing thing or what the situation with that is. Is there any word on that at all?
No, but God, I hope so, because her mother is so creepy and crazy, but at the same time, I loved those scenes, especially the ones with her threading the needle. Was, I think, one of the most emotional scenes of all of 3A. I was just crying so hard during that, and I would love to see her keep coming back, especially since Allison's going to continue having even more hallucinations. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I know she's someone like Victoria that, you know, the team, Jeff, I think at a panel was like, yeah, when we killed her after, like, you know, a few weeks later, we were like, that was a mistake. Billy could have used that character more, like, because she's so good, you know, and such an interesting character. But we shall have to see. I mean, I'm just curious about, like, what those hallucinations meant for Allison. Like, I kind of get the whole, like, threading the needle, like, imagining the scenario, but she sort of saw her at another point as well, and it was kind of something that never was addressed, like, why she kept having these thoughts then, and that was before the sacrifice, obviously. So, yeah, I'm curious about that. But the last major new character that we know about that's coming in this season, that, you know, there's a lot of small characters coming back, like, I believe, like, Zelda Williams, who was the girlfriend of the girl that got sacrificed in the thing.
Yay, not the sacrificing, yay, Zelda Williams, because you just really like her.
She's so funny. She's so, I still follow her on Twitter, and she's friends with, like, a lot of people in, like, the whole, like, nerd culture, like, scene. Like, you know, like, everyone on the internet that's, like, a celebrity nerd is mates with her, and it's really, she's so funny. But, yeah, so she's going to be coming back in some form, possibly dating someone, because her, you know, they're saying that her character is going to be very visibly bisexual, which is quite rare on TV shows. But yeah, so presumably she's going to be with a guy now, and she was with a girl before who died, but she's going to be there in some way. We don't know how exactly. So small characters like that are confirmed to come back, but there's a big plot point character played by Doug Jones, who's like quite a famous, like, sort of stunt action man kind of person. He's going to be playing a serial killer called William Barrow, so yay for serial killers. He's in the trailer. You kind of see him. He's kind of, you know, the tall, skinny guy, you know, a little bit dapper kind of skinny guy, and he's going to be a known killer, like a serial killer, whether it's, like, in a supernatural way, or whether it's just a normal crazy person killing people, or whether he's, like, a contracted assassin. We don't know, but the scenes with him in the trailer look kind of creepy. So
yeah. Did you just call a serial killer dapper?
Serial killers are always dapper. Have you seen Hannibal? Like, it's a thing. No, I'm sure they're not always dapper, but often you get, I'm gonna sound crazy, and I actually don't watch the new Hannibal show. I'm quite keen on watching it because their fandom seems crazy, but I have not watched it yet. Serial killers, as opposed to people who, like, brutally murder, you know, in Crimes of Passion or whatever, serial killers seem to sort of consider their work as an art, and they put a lot of thought into it, you know, especially if there's patterns and things like that. It's not just like, oh, I've mindlessly chopped someone with an axe. They think about it a lot, and they, you know, everything that addresses sort of serial killers in the media kind of shows this, and I mean, Hannibal's a good example, but there are a lot of other examples as well. Jim Moriarty in Sherlock, like, stuff like that. The more they think about it, the more dapper they're likely to be. It's a thing, because they're so precise that they're going to be really anal and precise about themselves as well, if you know what I mean.
True.
It's it is a character trait. I'm not just being weird, and I don't do serial killing. I'm really messy. So, yeah, it is a thing. If you sort of look at the way serial killers are portrayed in the media, it's a thing. Oh, sorry, I'm just stretching.
Anyway, this William Barrow guy, I'm actually really excited to see him on the show. Not only because Doug Jones, I feel like, has been in everything, everywhere. He's been in Buffy, he's been in Hellboy, he's done a lot of really cool and creepy things, and he's so good at what he does that I think having him on Teen Wolf is just really going to add a lot to it. But besides that, he's been described as a known killer, a monster, and I think what we've seen in the trailer so far, we sort of see him with this, like, electrical thing, and he's kind of putting it against the fence making it spark. And also we see him on, like, an operating table, and he sort of, like, comes up out of it, and he's got this, like, big hole in his chest. And the FBI agent, Scott's father, says something like, a mass murder is bad enough, but a mass murderer being controlled by somebody else is even worse. And that is just so interesting, because I don't necessarily take that as a supernatural thing, because I don't believe that his father is going to be in on the whole supernatural thing. But what could it mean, you know? And his the title of the episode that he's going to be coming into, which is 315, is Galvanize. And galvanize means to shock somebody, like, into taking action. And so I feel like that's just really relevant to what we know about the character so far and what we've seen in the trailer. Yeah.
I mean, it also means, like, reinforced with, like, metal or technology, like it's it's something you do to metal, so maybe he's a robot.
Maybe. Obviously. That could be cool.
Like, again, Buffy is something that, you know, with season 4, for example, with the Initiative, you had the supernatural element of the show, and then you also had this, like, technological, like, you know, military technology kind of thing, which right. wasn't supernatural, it was literally human-made technological, and that's something we haven't seen on Teen Wolf at all. We don't know how far their supernatural world spreads, but yeah, what if he's like a Frankenstein or something?
That would be really interesting. I mean, especially since we know that the Nemeton is going to be bringing all these different things to Beacon Hills, and that there's been talk of some possession or of, you know, these nasty spirits getting into people yeah. and sort of controlling them. And obviously the trio is hallucinating. So if Barrow was dead and they were, like, taking his organs out or something, and all of a sudden he's alive again. That is just really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously, yeah, again, the possession is something that we talked about in the Kitsune episode of theorizing, that if you want to learn more about, you can go and listen to. So there are a lot of options for, you know, how he could be controlled. This show's done, you know, obviously the Kanema, you know, can kind of control as well. And, you know, Peter controlling Lydia. There's, like, a litany of all different ways that people have been controlled in this show. So it really could be quite a few options. The last aspect we kind of have to talk about before Karen gives you a slight recap of the season premiere of season 313, Anchors, is the whole Isaac and Allison and Scott thing, which is, oh my god, Courtney. Sorry, I just clicked on our at replies, and I did a tweet earlier saying we are, you know, recording the episode now, spoilerific. Courtney's just replied us saying, I read that as spoiler fic, and my first reaction was, they're discussing fic without me? Question. No, sorry. We'll save that for another time.
We would never do that to you, Courtney.
No. Courtney, Donya, and Brooke finished their Tumblr, like, read-through of, like, every week of the hiatus, reviewing a different pairing of fan fiction this week of, you know, each wrecking, you know, a fanfic from, you know, the pairing of the week. And so they've been reading a lot of fanfiction over the hiatus, and possibly we should do an episode sort of recapping what their, you know, they discovered their favorite new pairings or new fanfictions were from that experience. But they kept it going, and hopefully people enjoyed that and got some good new stories from that. So, you know, yay for them for that. But speaking of pairings, the Allison-Isaac situation with Scott is obviously, again, in the trailer, something that's seen. You know, you kind of see Allison having these mixed feelings about going out with Isaac, and then her vision with Kate of sort of killing him, and, you know, them dancing, and then we haven't really seen Scott's reaction to all of this. So, but Scott is still living with Isaac, you know, in the McCall home. Isaac's still staying there. So how do you think that that's going to be done? Like, how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, I can definitely say that in the first episode you get quite a bit of that, and you kind of see how I think they're going to set up that whole situation, and it's really interesting. But aside from that, they have talked a lot about not making it sort of like a true love triangle, in that Scott is actually going to be trying to move on, and Isaac definitely has feelings for Allison, but he also doesn't want to kind of hurt or go behind Scott's back, because they're friends, and also because, you know, Scott's kind of his alpha now. I mean, I don't think, like, it's been, you know, they haven't had their initiation ceremony
with
yet.
With the candles.
Right, and the cloaks, but, that's a throwback joke for you. But, you know, I think that's definitely where they're heading. And I, at first, I was like, anybody that isn't Allison and Scott can just go home. And, but now I'm like, I don't know. I kind of like the idea of, you know, Scott and Allison, they need to take this break and they need to sort of see other people. And Isaac and Allison are kind of a good fit for each other. And I like the idea that it's not a true love triangle, that it's going to be okay. Like, they can all still be friends. And then yet Allison and Isaac can kind of test out their relationship. So I hope they continue going in that direction and it doesn't get too awkward.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it definitely could work. I mean, obviously the chemistry is there, but, just in case anyone missed the memo on this, I don't know if it's the reason for this plot line, but it certainly helps that Daniel Sharman is Crystal Reed's boyfriend in real life, like, from meeting on Teen Wolf. And so I don't know if it's, like, we want a storyline together or if it was sort of something that just worked for the show, but they certainly have the chemistry on screen, which was a very noticeable, obviously, that whole build-up during season 3A. Of them, you know, that dynamic. They clearly knew that it was going to be a thing that was going to happen in 3B, because that chemistry building up was very noticeable, you know, and right to the end point in when they did the drownings, that everyone was like, what is happening, you know, Scott and all of that. I've still said that, like, polyamory threesome is the way to solve this problem, because Isaac and Scott are super weirdly needy about each other too, but but obviously we also know that Scott's going to have, like, a love interest in Kira, so he can't be too, I want to say he can't be too hypocritical about it, but it would probably be different if Allison was dating someone brand new rather than, like, dating the guy that's sleeping in his bedroom. Like, that's kind of, right. It's kind of awkward, but I feel like I trust that it will be handled differently to the usual kind of, like, back and forth fighting and whatever. And, you know, like I said in an episode last season, I feel like that the way that Scott and Allison were when they met is very different to the way, like, Scott and Isaac aren't when they met. Like they were both in really different sort of places in their lives, given that Allison didn't know about her family and Scott had literally just become a werewolf, and he will always be, like, super protective of Allison, whereas Isaac and Allison are very much sort of on the same page. There's not the same sort of weird power struggles between them.
Right.
And I think that could be, like, a really good thing. And, you know, whether it is, like, a just for now thing or not, like, you know, sometimes people end up with different people. Sometimes, like, you know, something can be like an OTP for the first four seasons of a show, and then they end up with someone, like, totally different as the end game. Like, it does happen. So I don't know where it's going to go, but I do trust that it's going to be a bit different, and that Scott is going to be, a bit different to how you might have expected him to act in, like, season one or something like that, like raging and throwing things.
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, it comes down to it being realistic, because they were both in 10th grade when they first met, and although I think that, you know, the whole idea in the beginning is that they are kind of endgame, they're the OTP, it's sort of like, you know, who really stays together for that long, especially since I think, I don't know, do we know if Allison was definitely, like, his first girlfriend?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, as far as we know.
Right. And so for them to stay together, I think that whole time would have been really unrealistic. And although it is sad because I really do love the two of them together, I think it makes a lot more sense to have them sort of go out and explore new people and situations and stuff like that.
And, I mean, the Scott and Kira thing is interesting. Obviously, we don't know if that's going to be genuine or if that's going to be trickster love spirit stuff. But, you know, the press release does say, like, you know, that his life will change for the better when meeting her. So that kind of, you know, it basically says that. So that's nice, I suppose.
I hope so. I am so on board with Kira being, like, a totally awesome character, and I really don't want to get burned by how much I already kind of loved her.
Yeah, you already had that with Jennifer.
Yes, and just recently with Veronica Mars, with one of my characters that I'd been defending for the whole season, turned out to be a bad guy, and I was just like...
But who? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
I was going to say, you won't even know, but it was really sad. Let's just put it that way.
Maybe it'll end up okay. You don't know. I don't know either, but, you know, whatever.
Oh, it's not going to end up okay. He's dead now, so.
Oh, sorry.
But I really do.
You also loved Matt, Karen. So.
I know. I have this tragic,
so let's say it now. Kira's going to be evil. She's going to be a psychopath, obviously. If Karen loves them and wants to defend them, she's going to be a psychopath.
Oh, great.
All right. You saw the episode 3B. You got the screener, and you've seen it several times since receiving it. So, what can you tell us? What are your favorite things or whatever that you maybe, you know, things that aren't part of the major spoilers we've just. Oh, my God. Someone's just replied to Courtney saying, you know, about her, you're discussing fic without me, saying maybe they're discussing fics about you. That's not what's happening. And if anyone in this fandom ever writes a fic about us, I will quit the show. Because, just no. Unless it's, like, the crackiest, funniest thing I've ever seen in my life. That would be okay. But... yeah, if anyone actually writes fic about us in earnest, which I really hope never ever happens, that, you know, would be horrible. And we would definitely not discuss it because we would be crying. But if you were to write a cracky fic about us, that would be acceptable. Anyway, what's the favourite things from the episode? Anchors, anything maybe that's not part of the major spoilers we just discussed, things that you think you can tell us in advance of the episode coming out this week?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that the episode was so, so good. And I think it's honestly like one of my favorite episodes of the whole series so far. Maybe not the best one, but I mean, just the way that they kind of introduce it, the whole kind of cold open before the credits is amazing. And just the way that they set up everyone and kind of where they are mentally and everything, I think they do such a good job of it. And it's a really good first episode for all the kind of introductions that they have to do. In a first episode. So one of my favorite things was a throwback line that I'm not going to spoil because I want to see if people pick up on it. And I also think that it's better if you aren't spoiled on it. But there is a throwback line to season one, episode one in this in 313. And it is so funny. And I can't wait for everybody to hear it because it's really great. But then, you know, the other things are... that there is a new character, not Kira, mind you, but there's a whole nother character that pops up with superpowers. And I don't want to give anything else away, but it's kind of interesting that this mystery that they're setting up in the first episode, and I don't know how long her arc is going to last, but it definitely has kind of an important role, and she's going to be affecting a lot of the characters, both young and old, so the adults and the high schoolers and stuff. So I think that's going to be cool.
Okay, so that's not Kira. That's a different person.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, and I mean, Kira is in the first episode, too, and like I said before, I kind of fell in love with her right away. She's super awkward and funny and cute, and I, you know, in the first episode, she already meets the group, which I wasn't really expecting. I was kind of thinking that maybe she would have her own sort of storyline for a little while, and maybe they'd come together at some point when it was a bit more... like the pressure was on a bit more or something like that. But she's right in there with them in the first episode, and you can already see maybe the direction that they're going to be going in with Scott and her. So I think it's really cool what they're doing, and that's part of the reason why I really hope that she's not a psychopath. Mm. I want her to be cool.
Okay. Well, she'll be a psychopath because she loves her. So that's the rules. Jeff just stalks you, and when he finds out who you like, he's like gonna make them evil.
And then another character that really popped out to me in the first episode was Isaac. I felt like he had some of the funniest parts, even above Styles, in the whole episode. And they definitely address the whole Isaac, Allison, Scott thing, and it gets pretty funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And him just... Man, you know how we were talking last season about how he's, like, so sassy and he's got all those, like, comebacks now and everything? That definitely continued into this first episode, so I think that we're going to be seeing a lot more of that this season, and I'm so excited.
Cool.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, it's just this whole first episode was kind of mind-blowing, especially the way that they started it out, and I think that once you see the first episode, you're really going to get a sense of what the rest of the season is going to be like, and it's going to be nuts, absolutely crazy, and I cannot wait to see all of it.
One question for you. The scene that was previewed at Comic-Con with the sign language that got translated, I'm not sure if everyone got to see that or if it was just screened at the convention and not online. Is that from the first episode, or have we not seen that footage yet?
That is in the first episode, okay. And it ties into sort of, like, that's not the entire scene, and it kind of, like, that's part of the whole beginning, and so that's...
Okay, you know, so it's part of that cold open that you mentioned.
Yeah,
okay.
Yep, it's so good.
All right.
So.
Okay. Okay, well, we'll get excited. all right, is there anything else we want to sort of talk about, anything little that we've seen so far, little spoilers or any of the, you know, pictures we mentioned? As I said, I'm super excited for the internment camp backstory. I'm just really fascinated as to why that would be something that tied in. So what are you the most excited about from what you've seen so far?
Honestly, I think it's our trio having the hallucinations, because I feel like that's gonna really get us inside their heads and to sort of see what it's like to literally go from having a normal life to all of a sudden becoming a teen werewolf and a werewolf hunter and the best friend of a werewolf. And I feel like this is kind of a really cool and realistic approach to that. And like, I really like the shot of Allison coming out of the elevator, and then for a split second, we see, like, an evil Allison behind her,
yeah.
I think that's so creepy. And also, like, when Styles is screaming and he's really freaking out, it just kind of breaks your heart. But I really want to know the context of that and how far they're going to push him this year and to see kind of how he comes out in the end. Because, I mean, everything that they're going through, it messes with your mind. It's not just, you know, physical bruises and cuts and stuff. This is all psychological, and that's going to have lasting effects. And it's going to be really interesting to see how long those effects last for, you know, we know there's going to be a season 4. If there's going to be even more beyond that, how long all of this is going to kind of go into those seasons.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you say that and it's kind of making me think, like, there are a lot of these shows that have these weird, like, supernatural things happen in them, you know, Buffy going to a hell dimension and all sorts of things like that. They do have really lasting repercussions that aren't necessarily explored. Like, you don't really see people with, like, post-traumatic stress disorder or whatever. It's just kind of like they get on with, like, their lives, and what's, you know, happened is now just part of their life. So it's kind of interesting that they're, like, you know, taking it this way, that they are really saying, you know, obviously what happened was sort of a really strange mental experience, and that it now has these repercussions, because, yeah, the repercussions of what their life is like now often doesn't come into it with these kind of shows. They kind of, you know, physically, like, oh, how do I hide this? What do I do in this situation? Maybe, but not like, I'm having a breakdown because of this happening to me. And, you know, Scott, you know, Scott's a little bit more equipped, I think, to deal with it, even just physically, like, it's happening literally to him, and I think, you know, the physiological changes can possibly lead, you know, him to a little bit more acceptance, because he has all of that that goes hand in hand with it. But people like, you know, Allison, you know, she's a hunter and she's equipped for that and she's been training, but it's only for as long as Scott's known he was a werewolf, you know. It's not like been her whole life. And then Styles is completely sort of unequipped despite being super smart about it. You know, something that you mentioned in that article that you put out, you know, about the, you know, what you need to know for season 3B is, you know, you mentioned that Styles' patience with the whole situation has been wearing very thin the entire season, which is true, and now this has happened as well. So, yeah, having the mental repercussions, you know, even without the whole sacrifice, like having Styles' mental repercussions of, like, losing that patience and becoming, you know, snappy and frustrated and really, really not having that much control is something that you don't often see, and I like that. So it should be interesting to see now, you know, how crazy everyone gets. Sorry, guys. Okay, so we're going to leave it off there. If there's any other little spoilers that you guys know about and you kind of want to have a little bit of a back and forth with about us, feel free to tweet us or whatever, and, you know, Tumblr ask. But we, you know, will be focusing pretty much on the episode coming out next week, Anchors, and hopefully recording the episode and putting it out for you as soon as possible after the episode airs. So hopefully everyone's really excited about that happening, 10 p.m. Monday night on MTV, and you're stoked about what's going to happen in season 3B of Teen Wolf. We're going to finish with our non sequitur section, as we have been doing, where we just will have a little question for each other about something random, you know, Teen Wolf or non-Teen Wolf related, but nothing to do with this episode at all, just a little bit of personal back and forth, seeing as some of you seem to find that way too amusing. You know, us, you know, our idiocy being funny to you, so we'll provide that. Did you want to go first, Karen? Did you have a question, or...?
Sure. Yeah, I was thinking about, I mean, both of us have traveled quite extensively, I think, and I was wondering if you've ever gone to a place, could be a country, a city, you know, whatever, where you were, like, genuinely surprised that you enjoyed it as much as you did, or that you found the culture or something like that way more fascinating than you thought when you first decided to go there.
Yeah, a couple of places. A lot of the places I've been to in Europe, not all of them, but quite a few of them, are places that I only went to it a couple of days at a time when I was on tour with a band. So they weren't, like, you know, purposeful touristy places. That being said, like, while I was, for that time, like for 2.5 days or something, in Copenhagen, in Denmark, oh, I love it. I wanna live there. Like, it's just, I can't tell you why, it's just so nice. And I found this, like, secret garden in the middle of the city, and it's, like, literally my idea of, like, what, like heaven would look like if you, like, die and imagine you're in heaven. For me, it's like this garden, it's so, and just, like, it's just such a nice place, and I just really loved it. I don't know, I'm trying to think. I really enjoyed going back to Israel this year when I went there by myself as an adult, as opposed to going there, like, as a child with my family. Like, I found that quite interesting, and that was cool, because it was a really different experience. And actually the USA, Because the first time I went to the USA was for an event with a friend of mine. She was like, hey, come with me to this thing. And I'd never had any desire to go to the USA before I went there. Like, I know it has cool stuff. Like, it's, oh, you go there to go to Disneyland. You go there to go to, you know, various other things. But so many places in the USA, I just was so surprised that I just liked them for, you know, being themselves, like, from, like, New York City to, like, Missoula, which is, like, in Montana. Actually, it's where Hank Green lives, if anyone is.
Yeah, I was like, brothers.
But I went I there, know where I that went is. There, I went there, like, before I knew who Hank Green was. It was like on the way to somewhere. It's the nicest town. Like, I'm not shocked that he's never moved from there. It is the nicest, the vibe there of the people, like, it's like Montana, which isn't necessarily like the most progressive place. Like a lot of places in the middle of America in some way are not the most progressive. It's the nicest place. Everyone there, the vibe of the town, it's just fantastic. So I'm not surprised that he has never moved from there. The USA is actually somewhere that I'm pretty shocked that I liked so much, because I was never, as a kid, like, I want to go to America. I sort of only ended up going there incidentally when I was, like, an adult, like, in my 20s, and I really like it now, so, yeah, I'll come back and visit you guys sometime.
Yay!
I have a place I did not like that I expected to really like, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not here for this. And I feel bad about saying this in case we have any listeners here, but it was Dublin in Ireland. I was like, I expected it to be, and I think Ireland in general is probably really, really nice and you need to like drive around and see it, but the vibe of Dublin City, I was sort of not happy about it, and maybe it was just a bad day, but I was like, I expected Ireland to be like a magical place, and it was not magical for me. Sorry, guys.
I've actually been to Ireland and to Dublin too, and I remember definitely thinking there would be, yeah, it was going to be a little bit more magical. But I also know, like, a lot of the other places outside of Dublin were really nice. And
yeah.
And just the landscapes and stuff were so gorgeous. And it was cool. I ate a lot of mushroom soup when I was there.
Okay. I did have, like, the nicest ice cream of my life in Dublin, in Temple Bar. And, I don't know, there was just something about, like, the north. I very rarely, in any city that I've been in, have felt like threatened or unsafe walking down the street, and in the north part of Dublin, like above the river, I did not feel super stoked on it. Like I was quite surprised at that. But I had lots of good things happen to me in Dublin as well. I had the best ice cream ever. I got to see where Oscar Wilde was born. I met one of my favorite people ever randomly walking around in the streets of Dublin outside my hotel. Yeah, but I expected the city itself me to really love it, and I didn't. So sorry, Dubliners, but I but yeah,
that's really interesting actually, because that kind of segues into mine, because I kind of had like this opposite thing where I went to Morocco, and I wasn't really expecting to like it that much, because I didn't really know anything about it, and it was a kind of a joint trip, Morocco and Spain, and I've been taking Spanish since like eighth grade, and so I was always really into Spanish, and I always wanted to go to Spain, and I was really looking forward to that, and Morocco to me was just kind of like a step on the way to Spain, and it was, they had been telling us for days how dangerous it could be. We always had to have like a guard with us, like a local, they were armed, and it was kind of scary. And I got there and I felt really comfortable, and I thought that the whole country, you know, what I saw of it obviously was really nice, and I learned some really great things. And I was an art history student in college, so anytime that I can learn about like the architecture, the history of some of this stuff is just really fascinating to me. And I ended up really, really enjoying the country, and I was so surprised by it because I had not known anything about it. But I think it was just kind of like a combination of having a really good guide and having a really nice tour of these things that I ended up really kind of falling in love with. So it was nice to go there.
That's really cool. I'll have to go there sometime. My question for you was, what was the most recent dream you had that you can remember that you feel comfortable sharing, in case any of them were super weird?
Did you ask this on purpose?
No, why?
Okay. Well, because I was tweeted about something.
No, I didn't see. I haven't gone through my Twitter before I recorded today because it's early. Okay.
Well, this was from, like, the other day. I don't know if you saw it or
not.
Oh,
God. All right.
No, okay. I had this really weird dream about Styles / Dylan. Like, I don't know if he was being Styles or if he was being Dylan. It was kind of weird. But he was, like, a supervillain from, like, the Batman universe. And he was called the Sonic, and he was like an evil Sonic the Hedgehog.
I did see this. No, I forgot about this. I did see this dream. No, I asked because my dream was also about something Teen Wolf related, but no, I did see this.
The thing is, like, I didn't say this on Twitter, but he had like half of his face. You know how like Two-Face, obviously, has two different faces, but half of his face was like these long canines or whatever, and he had that, like, Lady Gaga lightning bolt on his face, and he just looked totally crazy.
That is so weird, Karen.
It's so random. Like, I don't know why I dreamed about it, but it was strange.
That is weird. My dream was also about Teen Wolf last night, and I woke up super confused.
You have best dreams.
It was so weird, though. It was, okay, there was Scott and Styles, and I do not remember if I was one of them or if I was sort of watching this from the outside, if you know what I mean. And but they were doing, like, they had, like, some summer job as doing, like, gardening, like, for some, I think I did a lot of gardening on the weekend, so I might be hanging on to that. I cut a lot of vines off a fence, and I think I'm still bothered about it. They were meant to be doing gardening, and like they were doing like a certain, and it was in like a big house, and I don't know if it was like an AU, like if it was like meant to be Beacon Hills or if it was meant to be Scott and Styles, the gardening boys, because I think the owner of the house was Lydia or Lydia's family, but she didn't seem to like know them in the same way, and she was going out pigeon shooting, like clay pigeon shooting with a gun, and I'm like, I'll go shoot guns with you, Lydia. I've never shot a gun, and I have no desire to, so, you know, whatever. But then there was a big bad in some way that I feel like was, like, a gigantic vampire. I don't mean, like, giant, like, 7 foot. I mean, like, a giant the size of a giant that was a vampire in some way. And it was really, like, I remember it holding one of them in its hand. Like a King Kong, like, or like a something, but like a vampire. It was so weird. I don't remember exactly why or what ended up happening. Right when I woke up, I remembered the whole thing, and now I don't, but it was really strange. But yeah, they were gardening as a summer job, so that was odd.
This is what happens when you think about Teen Wolf too much.
Yeah. Oh god. So yeah, we should start making a blog of all our weird Teen Wolf dreams, like every time we have one, get up and write it. But yeah, so that's, I guess, all we've got for you this week, and then we will speak to you next week after the episode airs. We have a few plans for this season starting next week. We kind of have a special plan for every episode of this season, for every recap episode for the new Teen Wolf episodes this season, which we will start with next week, and you shall have to wait and see, I suppose. But yeah, we hopefully intend to spice things up a bit, and you can look forward to hearing from us after each episode, hopefully maybe not the morning after, but hopefully the night after or something like that, because Teen Wolf airs really late, so it's a bit difficult. If it aired at like 7 p.m. we could record afterwards, but it's a little bit late, but it's fine. You guys will have plenty of time to listen to us talk in between the next episode and all of that. So, yeah, for now we'll say bye, but hopefully everyone's stoked and we'll all talk next week once we have a new episode to watch. Anything else, Karen?
That's about it. I mean, we're still going to be doing our live tweeting like we usually do, and definitely make sure you keep an eye on the Tumblr. There's always going to be tons of good stuff on there. So everything that we did last season for 3A is still going to be in practice. And yeah, look out for some cool things coming for this season too.
Oh, yeah. And we're on 2,811 Twitter followers. And the offer still stands that if it gets to 3,000 by the 6th of January, that we'll do something ridiculous, like some sort of punishment, you know, Vlogbrothers style. I am so unstoked on this, but it is a thing. So if you want to contribute to that, you know, get people to follow us on Twitter, because our ratio of Tumblr to Twitter is pretty low. Like Twitter, we have a few thousand, Tumblr, we have quite a few more thousand. So if we want to get everyone who follows us on Tumblr to come over to follow us on Twitter too, that would be super nice. So follow us on Twitter and then make us do something dumb. Yay!
Incentive.
Okay. Let us know if there's anything you'd like from us for the Season 3 Bay. I mean, we can't do everything, but let us know if the way that we're covering it is A-okay with you. So we always want to know, and as I mentioned, if you are approving of our antics, please go and say so on iTunes, because it helps us be legit. So, yeah. Bye for now, I guess, and happy watching. Yay!
Bye. Bye, guys!
Oh, one last question before we go about the premiere episode. You are a big fan of the play on words with the episode titles, generally, and this episode's called Anchors. So, did that live up to your hopes and dreams with episode titles? How did that come into it? Is there anything you can say about that?
I think that it's pretty straightforward this time, actually. And if you remember what anchors have meant in the past, you'll be able to understand what the episode title is. And I don't think it would give anything away to really say that, because it is pretty straightforward. So, I think what they do with that idea is pretty cool, and I guess the one tease I'll say is that the major line that ties into the title Anchors comes from Mama McCall.
Okay, cool. Interesting. We shall look forward to that. All right, so bye, Karen.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Wake up, wake up, leave it all behind. Lose your mind. Wake up, wake up, leave or you'll succumb. Wake up, wake up, more is yet to come.
Can you give us like a quote completely out of context that will make like no sense, that will make us curious?
Oh god. I don't know if I can think of one off the top of my head.
That's okay. You don't have to. We should leave that bit out. That's fine. I was just wondering if anything stuck out that was like super random.
It would have been great, but I was like, I don't know. I've only watched it like 6 times. How do you expect me to remember?